Good morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Wednesday, March 21st, 2006. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Becca Bartleson.
Coming up on this morning's news, Governor Kulongoski will debate Democratic challengers. Several Middle Eastern banks announced they're dumping the dollar. And the U.S. military investigates the killing of Iraqi civilians by U.S. Marines. Today's weather calls for occasional showers, highs 50 to 55. And tonight, a chance of showers in the evening, then becoming rain likely after midnight, lows in the lower 40s.
Oregon Governor Ted Kulongoski, a no-show at several recent debates, has agreed to face his challengers next month. Kulongoski will debate Democrats Jim Hill of Salem and Pete Sorensen of Eugene on April 6th and April 10th, a few weeks before ballots are mailed for the May primary. The three leading Republican gubernatorial candidates, Kevin Mannix, Ron Saxton, and State Senator Jason Atkinson, will not take part in the debates, nor will independent Ben Westlin. The Democrats will first meet at the Plumbers and Steamfitters Local 290 Union Hall in Tualatin for a debate hosted by the State Democratic Party. Tom Hartman, a radio host, has agreed to moderate. On April 10th, Hill, Kulongoski, and Sorensen will meet at KGW-TV, which will broadcast the debate live at a statewide audience. Anchorwoman Tracy Berry will moderate. During a debate at Willamette University last week, the six other major candidates criticized Kulongoski for not participating. That complaint was echoed Friday at the City Club of Portland, where Hill and Sorensen took the stage. Kulongoski recently failed to win key endorsements from the Oregon Education Association and the Service Employees International Union. But political analyst Jim Moore, a political science professor at Pacific University, said Kulongoski's decision to enter two debates may not be related to his losing those endorsements.
With Measure 37 back on the books, planning departments across the state report a steady flow of landowners seeking government compensation or the right to build homes and businesses. Much of the activity is taking place in Washington and Clackamas counties, where farmland confronts intense pressure for growth. Each county received about a dozen claims last week. Last month's Oregon Supreme Court decision to uphold the property rights law also gave successful complaints claimants who had to play a four-month waiting game and go ahead for their development plans. Planning directors say they don't know when claims will slow. Measure 37 gave applicants until December of this year to be excused from the existing land use rules, but a new two-year window can be triggered by applying to build and getting rejected under modern regulations.
A Portland man died yesterday after police used a stun gun to subdue him during a struggle. Police say the 46-year-old man was running and yelling in traffic and became combative when they tried to take him into custody. Police say they used a taser to subdue and handcuff him. The man was conscious and alert immediately after the shock, but later collapsed. Authorities say he died on the way to the hospital, and an investigation is underway and an autopsy is planned.
State officials want to know how Oregonians are using weed killers on their lawns and gardens, so they ask hundreds to keep a diary of their pesticide use. The Oregon Department of Agriculture requires commercial and agricultural users to report their use of pesticides, which can affect soil quality and pollute streams. But this is the first time the state will have any information on homeowners' use of pesticides. State officials say they think it is the first state-funded household pesticide survey in the country.
The Eugene Water and Electric Board is holding a public hearing tonight to give the public a chance to comment on proposed rate increases. The EWEB staff has recommended a residential rate hike of 7.4% for electricity and 7.7% increase in residential water rates. Officials say the electricity rate increase is due to higher debt payments and higher Bonneville Power Administration wholesale electricity rates. Also, they say more funding is needed for renewable energy resources. If approved, the rate hikes will take effect April 1st and show up on customers' bills in May.
This weekend, thousands of people across the globe took to the streets to mark the third year anniversary of the invasion of Iraq and demonstrated against the continued U.S. presence there. Meanwhile, in Washington, a new report by the Congressional Research Office shows that the U.S. will spend 44% more on the war this year than last. FSRN's Darby Hickey reports.
spending on war and occupation will average almost $10 billion a month for this fiscal year, according to a new report by the nonpartisan Congressional Research Service. A substantial portion of that money will go to replace or repair military equipment and vehicles, the report says. Very little of these funds are for oversight of the billions spent on war, says Anita Danch of the National Priorities Project.
Congress could demand that there is much better mechanisms put into place to see where the money is going, where it's being spent. We have stories about money in Iraq being moved around in wheelbarrows. So Congress needs to put some institutional oversight in place that goes beyond what's being done so far.
Last week, the House of Representatives approved $72 billion for war costs. If passed by the Senate, that will bring the total to over $400 billion spent since 2001. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Darby Hickey in Washington, D.C.
Police cited 10 adults and warned 8 high school students yesterday who protested the Iraq War near the Eugene offices of Senators Ron Wyden and Gordon Smith. The first protest happened at the federal courthouse. About 15 people entered the building at 9:30 a.m. and ignored orders to leave. Two uniformed veterans read a message they had to hope to deliver to Smith, whose office is housed in the building. Federal Protective Services officers cited 3 adults for disorderly conduct and gave 7 students as warnings. A second group of about 60 people visited the offices of Wyden and Democratic Representative Peter DeFazio. About 24 entered the building and read aloud the names of U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq. 8 people were detained there, including 1 high school student. The action coincided with dozens of similar events around the country, marking the 3rd anniversary of the war.
Michael Stipe, Susan Sarandon, Cindy Sheehan, and others marked the 3rd anniversary of the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq with a concert to benefit groups campaigning against the war. Organizers of Monday's night Bring 'Em Home Now concert said 3,000 tickets were sold. I was raised by peace activists, Moby announced to the crowd at Hammerstein Ballroom, from the stage flanked by 2 oversized peace symbols. He then accompanied Laura Dawn in a rendition of Buffalo Springfield's Vietnam-era song, For What It's Worth. Sheehan, whose son was killed in Iraq, gained international attention last summer with her month-long protest outside Bush's ranch in Texas.
Mayor Ray Nagin presented his plan for resuscitating New Orleans, saying residents should be allowed to rebuild anywhere, as long as they do it so at their own risk. Nagin said the city will continue issuing building permits to all comers, but warned that low-lying neighborhoods like New Orleans East and Lower Ninth Ward could flood again if another hurricane hits. The report also recommended a host of other ideas, from revamping schools to consolidating some city offices. The wish list of projects included new light rail systems, more farmers markets, new riverfront development, job training sites, and better flood protection. But the blueprint does not have the force of law, and many of its aims depend on federal funds that have not yet been allotted. A state agency, the Louisiana Recovery Authority, and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development also will have sway. The plan comes 2 months after the Mayor's Advisory Commission, formed after Katrina struck August 29th. Recommended that some flooded neighborhoods be replaced with parks and that the city take a go-slow attitude in rebuilding low-lying areas. But that suggestion was greeted with jeers and outrage at public meetings. Nagin, who's running for re-election April 22nd, distanced himself from the plan, which included a proposed moratorium on building permits in some areas. Residents lined up to speak out against the latest proposal during a public comment period, but the new plan has been warmly received in many circles. The release of the report came hours after civil rights group took aim at the state's plans for rebuilding, which including spending billions of federal dollars to buy flood-damaged homes. Groups including the NAACP, the Advancement Project, and the New Orleans-based People's Hurricane Relief Fund complained that the state's plan gave short shrift to poor and low-income victims by focusing too much on bailing out homeowners and encouraging high-end development at the expense of low-income renters.
As demonstrators and lawmakers weighed in on the effects of the war in the nation's capital, 150 war veterans and their supporters marched into New Orleans on Sunday to make the economic connection between military efforts in Iraq and the failure to rebuild the Gulf Coast. The rally marked the conclusion of a 5-day march from Mobile, Alabama to New Orleans through some of the areas most devastated by Hurricane Katrina. FSRN's Christian Roseland has more.
U.S. military veterans from 3 generations and 5 wars marched together with supporters into New Orleans on Sunday to draw attention to the region's plight. Jeffrey Millard is a sergeant with the U.S. Army who spent 13 months in Iraq. In a rally in New Orleans' Congo Square at the end of the march, Millard said that he wished he could have been to the region sooner, but that his government had kept him in another country. Millard, like many, compared the meager federal funding of Gulf Coast rebuilding to the rebuilding of other areas.
As we walked through all these devastated places, it looked like a lot of the places that I've seen. And I looked at Manhattan, I look at Manhattan today and how well it's been rebuilt and how quickly we mobilize an effort for humanitarian aid. And I look at Iraq and how we're going to spend $510 billion this year brutalizing that country. Is there a rep from SOS here? What could you do with $510 billion?
Also at the rally, Common Ground founder and Vietnam veteran Malik Rahim thanked one of the chief organizers of the march, Veterans for Peace, for generous early support, saying that without the veterans there would be no Common Ground. Rahim's aid organization has been providing medical care, distributing supplies, and gutting homes since the first days after the storm. President Bush's recent request to Congress for $4.6 billion to rebuild the Gulf Coast has passed the House, but is bundled with a much larger sum for expenditures in Iraq. Local leaders are quick to point out that they do not know how much of this money will make its way to Louisiana, or how much individual homeowners will receive. For FSRN, this is Christian Roseland.
George W. Bush has signed a bill that will raise the national debt ceiling to nearly $9 trillion. The bill means the government can borrow another $781 billion and stops what would have been a first-ever default of Treasury notes. It also allows the U.S. to pay for that war in Iraq without increasing taxes or making domestic cuts. It is the fourth debt increase since Bush took power and comes as the budget deficit reaches near record levels. Another increase in the debt's limit is likely next year.
A number of Middle Eastern central banks said yesterday they would seek to switch reserves from the U.S. dollar to euros, this from the Middle East Forex. The United Arab Emirates said it was considering moving one-tenth of its dollar reserves to the euro, and the governor of Saudi Arabian Central Bank condemned the decision of the United States to force Dubai Ports World to transfer its ownership to a U.S. entity, asking if it is protectionism or discrimination. The head of the United Arab Emirates Central Bank said the bank was considering converting 10% of its reserves from dollars to euros. The Commercial Bank of Syria has already switched the state's foreign currency transactions from dollars to euros. The decision by the Bank of Syria follows the announcement by the White House calling on all U.S. financial institutions to end correspondent accounts with Syria due to money laundering concerns.
Members of South Dakota Peace and Justice met at the Rapid City office of Congresswoman Stephanie Herseth last Friday to call for the impeachment of President Bush and Vice President Cheney in connection to the ongoing war in Iraq. FSRN's Jim Kent spoke to activists to examine their views on the Bush administration, the war in Iraq, and its impact on people living in the U.S.
If pre-war intelligence was manipulated...
Members of South Dakota Peace and Justice support U.S. House Resolution 635, introduced by Michigan Representative John Conyers, the House Judiciary Committee's ranking Democrat. The legislation calls for a select committee to investigate charges of criminal acts by the President and Vice President, alleging the Bush administration manipulated pre-war intelligence in order to gain popular and congressional support for invading Iraq. South Dakota Peace and Justice spokesperson Rosalie Little Thunder agrees with that view.
We've been lied to before about why we attacked Iraq, and we're being told a lot of things about why we should take a look at Iran now. It's very disturbing that we would continue to be, you know, a tyrant country.
Marv Kammerer brought a body bag to Representative Herseth's office to remind her that each of the 2,300 Americans who died in Iraq had someone waiting for them at home.
Stick them in a box, fly them home under the cover of darkness so nobody sees. Stick them in the ground, forget about them. Cut the budget. You know, my kids, grandkids are going to have to pay for this goddamn mess.
Kammerer adds that it's time for the Bush administration to grow up.
Stop their teenage redneck act and get down to basics. Get ready to bring the boys home.
Rosalie Little Thunder pointed out that the demonstration's primary goal was to advise Representative Herseth she was elected to serve the people of South Dakota.
You know, the leadership should be listening to the people that voted for them and not just going along with what's happening in Washington.
I would if I could bring them back home.
Further clarification of that point may be needed. The Congresswoman's office released a statement Friday afternoon noting that Herseth does not believe supporting Kanye's call to investigate the Bush administration is the proper action at this time. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Jim Kent in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The U.S. Senate is going to vote this month on a bill to impose tariffs of up to 27.1% on some Chinese goods unless Beijing moves to free up its currency. A delegation of U.S. senators is visiting Beijing for action over the value of the yuan and its impact on U.S.-Chinese trade. China has ruled out another revaluation after raising the yuan's value in July. The Bush administration is pressing for more action, believing the yuan's value is fueling the growing U.S. trade deficit.
Troops began delivering aid today to an estimated 7,000 people who lost their homes to the cyclone that battered Australia's northeastern coast. No one was killed when Category 5 Cyclone Larry came to shore near Innisfail on early Monday, and only minor injuries were reported. But the tempest flooded streets, tore roofs off homes, and flattened sugar and banana plantations. The storm left the town without power and water, and officials said it could be days before they were restored. About 170 troops were helping to deliver aid, while cleanup and special search and rescue crews were also heading to the town. Churches and community groups were setting up temporary accommodations. Among supplies flowing in were nearly 10,000 gallons of water and 6,000 in-flight meals. Troops also set up water purification units, and health authorities warned residents to boil their water. Meanwhile, weather forecasters warned that another cyclone named Wadi was moving toward the Queensland coast, south of where Larry struck, but the storm was currently much weaker than Larry and may yet change direction.
Scientists say rising temperatures may account for rising cases of malaria in some regions of Africa. Researchers from the University of Michigan recorded a half degree Celsius temperature rise in the East African Highlands over the last 50 years. They say the small rise may have doubled the number of malaria-carrying mosquitoes. But they stress the climate change thesis is still one theory among many. Other possible explanations for the rise in malaria in the region include the increasing movement of people, rising resistance to anti-malarial drugs, and decreasing quality of health care.
The U.S. gold mining company Newmont has suspended work at an Indonesian site after an attack on a workers' camp. This from the BBC. A group of about 50 unidentified people raised the camp on the island of Sumbawa on Sunday. Operators were warned of the attack and evacuated the camp's 200 residents, so there were no injuries. The attack comes against a background of rising anger at Western mining and energy interests in Indonesia. Last week, four security officers were killed in the province of Papua by protesters demanding the closure of another gold mine owned by U.S. giant Freeport-McMoRan. There have also been demonstrations in Java against a decision to make the American ExxonMobil company the operator of an oil and gas field owned jointly with Indonesia's state energy company.
Traffic was tied in knots and businesses closed temporarily today as demonstrators seeking the resignation of Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra brought their protest to Bangkok's commercial district. Thousands of protesters, cheered on by office workers, vowed to demonstrate against every business that supports Thaksin until he is ousted. The Prime Minister's critics have been mounting a growing campaign of street protests calling for him to step down because of alleged corruption and abuse of power. Businesses on Salam Road, in the heart of Bangkok commercial district, closed and erected barricades, but employees spilled onto their street to cheer, wave, and shout, "Thaksin, get out," as the protesters marched past. Protest leaders have announced another mass rally for Saturday and said more demonstrations would target all enterprises supporting Thaksin. Thaksin has repeatedly said he will not resign before an April 2nd election, he called. The parliamentary opposition is boycotting the vote.
Nepalese soldiers hunted down communist rebels in the northern mountains today as insurgents attacked police stations in the southeast of the Himalayan country in a day of violence that left at least 33 people dead. The Maoist rebels have stepped up attacks since calling off a unilateral ceasefire at the start of the year. And Tuesday's spike in violence came 2 days after the insurgents ended a six-day highway blockade that had crippled life across the country. In mountains outside of Kathmandu, soldiers hunted down and killed at least 20 rebels near a village, about 50 miles northwest of the capital. Hundreds of miles to the southeast, rebels fired guns and detonated bombs in attacks on police posts in two towns.
A Spanish judge indicted 32 people for allegedly plotting to drive a truck packed with explosives into a courthouse that has been the hub of anti-terrorism investigations. The 32 men, mostly Algerians, were charged with membership in a terrorist organization, conspiracy to commit a terrorist attack, and forgery of public documents. The suspects include Mohamed Arkraf, the alleged mastermind of who was extradited from Switzerland to Spain in April. Spanish authorities suspect Arkraf for planning to ram a truck loaded with 1,100 pounds of explosives into the court in downtown Madrid.
Police seized Palestinians with explosives who were on their way to carry out a bombing, capping a high-speed chase that brought large parts of the country to a standstill just before national elections. A Jerusalem police spokesman said the assailants were carrying 11 pounds of explosives and intended to plant a bomb in central Israel. He said 10 people were arrested. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but security forces have been on high alert ahead of the election, especially since Israel forced assault on a West Bank jail last week and arrested 6 wanted Palestinians. An attack could have deep repercussions for the election. The centrist Kadima Party, which holds a wide lead in opinion polls, has been accused by its hawkish rivals of being too soft on the Palestinians. Past elections have been affected by violence. Reflecting the jitters, Israel has banned Palestinians from entering the country until after the March 28th election and greatly restricted movement through the Gaza Strip's main cargo crossing. With the closure causing shortages of bread and other essential items in Gaza, Israel allowed the crossing to temporarily reopen today.
U.S. military investigators have flown to Iraq to study reports that Marines killed at least 15 civilians, including 7 women and 3 children, in the city of Haditha. This from the BBC. The military's initial claim that the civilians died in a roadside blast was disproved by an earlier investigation. Local residents in Haditha said the Marines went on the rampage after one U.S. soldier was killed in a roadside blast and another 2 were injured on November 19, 2005. The residents say the soldiers began shooting, killing the inhabitants of nearby homes and others from the area. A military report at the time had said insurgents opened fire from all directions after the roadside explosion and the Marines responded, killing 8 fighters and blamed the deaths of 15 civilians on the initial blast. Locals offered a different version of events, and the case was taken up by U.S. News Weekly. Time reporter Bobby Ghosh told the BBC that a videotape given to the magazine by an Iraqi human rights group had shown the civilians could not have been killed by a roadside bomb. Amnesty International has long accused the U.S. military of failing to investigate adequately claims that its soldiers have killed Iraqi civilians. U.S. troops have launched several assaults on the town of Haditha in the western province of Anbar.
Insurgents stormed a jail at dawn today in the Sunni Muslim heartland north of Baghdad, killing at least 17 policemen and a courthouse guard. Authorities said all 33 prisoners in the lockup were freed and 10 attackers were killed in the battle. As many as 100 insurgent fighters, armed with automatic rifles and rocket-propelled grenades, stormed a judicial compound about 60 miles northeast of the capital. The assault began after the attackers fired a mortar round into the police and court complex. After burning the police station, they detonated a string of roadside bombs as they fled, taking the bodies of many of their dead comrades with them. At least 13 policemen and civilians and 15 gunmen were wounded in the attack. Five other police were wounded in 2 separate roadside bomb attacks targeting patrols in northern and southern Baghdad. Today's assault came a day after 39 people were reported killed by insurgents and shadowy sectarian gangs in Iraq, continuing the wave of violence that has left more than 1,000 Iraqis dead since the bombing last month of a Shiite Muslim shrine.
Beginning the 4th year of an unpopular war, President Bush defended his Iraq record against skeptical questioning. He said he could, quote, understand people being disheartened, but appealed to Americans to look beyond the bloodshed and see signs of progress. Bush answered questions for nearly an hour Monday at the City Club, a forum known for its tough interrogations of world leaders. Not only was he grilled on Iraq, but he was also asked to justify his warrantless wiretrapping program, U.S. relations with Pakistan, and his domestic priorities.
Uzbekistan has ordered the UN's refugee agency, the UNHCR, to leave within 1 month. The agency said it had received a letter from the Uzbek Ministry for Foreign Affairs saying that it had fulfilled its role in the country. The UNHCR has been in the country since 1993 and currently looks after around 2,000 refugees, many from Afghanistan. The spokesman from the agency said that the announcement came as a complete surprise. They pledged they would try to make alternative arrangements to meet the needs of refugees. The Uzbek authorities are yet to comment.
That was the KBOO Morning News for Wednesday, March 21st, 2006. Portland area weather. Occasional showers, highs 50 to 55 tonight. A chance of showers in the evening, then becoming rain likely after midnight, lows in the lower 40s. Thanks for joining us for this morning's news. This morning's newscast was edited by Becca Bartleson and Brian Smith. Our engineer is Ravia Yeaman. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Becca Bartleson.
And I'm Brian Smith.
Coming up later on KBOO,